Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. A major symposium, spearheaded and organized by the Pontifical Gregorian University in Rome, gathers bishops from across the globe to launch a new initiative aimed at improving efforts to address the clerical sex abuse crisis. Representatives of 100 bishops' conferences and 30 religious orders have been meeting in Rome this week to launch a global initiative aimed at improving efforts to address the clerical sex abuse crisis. And in the words of the Vatican's top expert on child protection, Monsignor Charles Scicluna, make a strong move to combat the deadly culture of silence, which in some places still exists.
We need to move on from a culture of silence. And where it is, we need to denounce it for what it is. It is an enemy of truth and an enemy of justice.
Monsignor Scicluna is promoter of justice at the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. On the question of compensation and justice for victims, he says it's important for local churches to cooperate fully with the civil law of their countries. But he says church guidelines on dealing with abuse cases should also look closely at these very practical questions. And echoing Pope John Paul II's words that there is no place in the priesthood or religious life for those who harm the young, Monsignor Scicluna stresses that formation is at the heart of the struggle to create a new culture of awareness and commitment to child protection. Not just the formation of seminarians, priests and laypeople, but also of bishops, to ensure better accountability from all leaders of the church.
What we need to do is to be vigilant in choosing candidates for the important role of bishop, and also to use the tools that canonical law and tradition give for accountability of bishops. It's not a question of changing laws, it's a question of applying what we have, but also make it clear that there is a behaviour that is not compatible with being a good shepherd.
As I said earlier, during the course of the four-day conference entitled Towards Healing and Renewal at Rome's Pontifical Gregorian University, a new initiative funded by different dioceses plus private sponsors and a donation from the Papal Foundation was born. It foresees the launch of a child protection centre to provide valuable resources for bishops' conferences around the world. Based in Munich, it's described as an e-learning centre, which will try to bring together the experiences and best practices from different countries in dealing with abuse, making them available in English, Spanish, Italian and German to churches in countries around the world. Meanwhile, the symposium itself, organised and spearheaded by the Pontifical Gregorian University, provided an occasion for prelates and experts from all over the world to come together to share experiences, problems and solutions. It also provided a rare occasion to hear the first-hand account of a victim of clerical sex abuse, whom, in line with symposium organisers and participants, expressed the desire that words move to action and the safety of children become the church's top priority.
Certainly in my experience, there is very little spiritual help given to survivors.
Marie Collins was abused as a young girl by an Irish hospital chaplain.
It appears to me from discussing it with members of the hierarchy in my own country that they look on survivors as being outside the church, as being angry and hurt and wanting nothing to do with the church. And the fact is, most survivors were Catholics, came from Catholic families, that's why priests had access to them. And to think that we are all now outside the church and want nothing to do and have no interest in regaining our Catholic faith, I said that I thought it was wrong.
She was one of the key speakers at the symposium and was also a part of the congregation at a penitential liturgy in the Church of the Holy Apostles for conference participants. Marie spoke at length to Philippa Hitchin, who attended the symposium for Vatican Radio.
Mary, when you first came here, you said it was very difficult for you to do this. And I'm just wondering what kind of experience, personal experience, this conference has been for you.
It has been a huge changing point for me personally and for how I feel about the church. I came here quite suspicious, if you like, quite cynical, wondering, was there sincerity in it? And what I have found is that I believe there is, and I think that has probably... It has moved me a little bit, you know, beyond where I was, and I was able to take part last night, and I found it quite moving to take part, and I couldn't understand everything that was being said, but I think to see so many bishops there and the cardinal basically asking forgiveness for what the church has done in the past, I think that is something we wouldn't have seen 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. So it is a change, and I'm hopeful for the church now.
You said earlier that you had forgiven your abuser, but you found it so very hard to forgive the church leadership, the bishops, who made your life so much harder than it already was. Did that penitential service in some way help to heal at all?
Yes, in a general way, it certainly has. I still, I suppose, have some vestiges of a wish that certain people who were more involved with my case would maybe have been there last night asking for forgiveness, but you can't have everything, you know. But it certainly did help, you know. I mean, the priest that I first spoke to about my abuse and told me to go away, that basically he wouldn't take my abuser's name and that the abuse was my own fault. He lives in Dublin. He's a parish priest in Dublin. I have tried to contact him in every way. I want to sit down and talk to him. I just want to know why. I want him to know how that hurt me. And he's slammed the door in my face. He won't speak to me. So it's little things like that are still there. But on a general, much wider level, I'm feeling a lot more comfortable with the Catholic Church from what I have seen here this last few days.
You said that many survivors groups don't agree with you. They see you as somehow selling out. What That's is right. your message to others, those people who can't forgive the church, who don't want to move on in a way?
I can understand their anger and I can understand their hurt. I can understand their cynicism and the fact that they cannot trust the church. And I have no right to tell them to change. I would just ask them to maybe watch and wait and see if something concrete does come from this and if something does change. I felt it was worth the risk to come and talk, because if the bishops of the world who are here, if they could understand a little bit more about abuse, maybe it would help to save children in the future. So if I'm being used by the church, as some of these groups would say, I have to live with that. But I felt it was worth taking the risk, if it even helps one child, to not be abused in the future.
The one thing you've been very clear about is the need for guidelines, but also the ability to enforce those guidelines to make sure that everybody is doing what they're supposed to do in these cases. Do you see any sense that that is being taken seriously, the enforcement aspect?
That's a worry I do have because of personal history. When I reported my abuse, there were guidelines in Ireland. They had just come in, and Archbishop, later Cardinal Connell, told me they didn't have any force in canon or civil law, and therefore he didn't have to follow them. That was when I was asking him why he wasn't following them. He said he didn't have to follow them. And then we had new guidelines put in place, and we had a third set put in place, and we saw only 3 years ago that they were ignored by Bishop McGee in Cloyne. So you can have them there, you can have them down on paper, but unless they are enforced, they're worthless. So that's why my hope is, if guidelines are brought in around the world, there will be some way. Obviously, civil law can penalise if there's a blatant, some action of a bishop which is blatant, but there should be some ecclesiastical penalty for any bishop who doesn't follow church guidelines that have been set in place to protect children. I'm not an expert on that. I imagine it would probably mean bringing in some new canon law, and I don't know how many centuries it takes to do that. But all I can do is put the question out there. I feel there should be. If a bishop wants to ignore it, and he's found out that he's been ignoring it, and children have come to harm because of that, there should be some penalty coming from above
from the church. He shouldn't be able to get away with it and just say, well, it happened, I was on a learning curve, or whatever, you know.
But you would, however, see this conference as some kind of turning point. Is that fair to say in this whole sad saga?
I may be proved wrong, but I really do feel, I listened to Monsignor Scicluna this morning, and I felt everything he said was very clear, very direct. Any bishop listening to him could not have been under any misapprehension about what he was saying, about reporting, about putting in place guidelines, about not, about secrecy, about everything that we have been, as survivors, asking that should be there. So with someone like that, speaking like that, and going to back it up with, hopefully, this conference won't just end, there will be more resources for the bishops, and hopefully it'll be checked. I think they have a deadline by next May. So I really do feel hopeful, and I could be setting myself up for all these survivor groups to say, there you are, you were stupid. But it's worth taking the risk. That's all I can say. I felt it was worth taking the risk. And if I am being stupid and being used, well, that's life.
Marie Collins, as I said earlier, was one of the key speakers at the conference, invited in the firm belief that victims and survivors of clerical sexual abuse must be our essential teachers if we are to truly understand and act upon their trauma. Only by listening to their voices, in fact, will the Church find ways to ensure that no child or vulnerable person will ever again be abused by any person in a position of trust and power within the Church. The symposium, which started on Monday, opened with a message from Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone in the name of Pope Benedict XVI. In it, the Pope reiterates his conviction that healing for abuse victims must be of paramount concern in the Christian community, together with a profound renewal of the Church at every level. The Pope therefore ensured his support and encouragement for every effort to respond with evangelical charity to the challenge of providing children and vulnerable adults with an ecclesial environment which is conducive to their human and spiritual growth. And he urged the participants in the symposium to continue drawing on a wide range of expertise in order to promote throughout the Church a vigorous culture of effective safeguarding and victim support. On day one of the conference, Cardinal William Levada, prefect of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, addressed the inaugural session. And as Philippa Hitchin reported, he remembered existing Church documents that have been drawn up, revised and updated in recent years to ensure a coordinated response to reported cases of clerical sexual abuse. But he stressed that a wider-ranging response is needed.
A multifaceted response to the delicate and urgent challenge of sexual abuse in the Church. That's what Cardinal Levada offered participants on the opening day of the conference, highlighting actions already taken by the popes and his Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith over the decades since the scandals began making news headlines. Speaking of the document introduced by Pope John Paul in 2001 on the most serious crimes to be dealt with by the Congregation, revised and updated by Pope Benedict in 2010, the Cardinal said the Holy See was able to ensure a coordinated response to the more than 4,000 cases of sexual abuse that were reported over the past decade. But he said it became increasingly clear that an exclusively canonical response was an inadequate way of dealing with the tragedy, a realisation that led to the drawing up of a circular letter to assist bishops' conferences in developing guidelines for dealing with abuse cases. That letter, dated May the 3rd, 2011, invites bishops the world over to pay attention to the formation of clergy, to ensure protection of the young and vulnerable in their care, and to respond to victims who come forward seeking remedy or help. The first need of most victims, the Cardinal said, is to be heard and to know that the Church listens to their stories, understands the gravity of their abuse, and accompanies them on the long path towards healing. That's why Pope Benedict has met personally with victims during his many pastoral visits to the UK, Malta, Germany, Australia, or the United States. That's also why, in his letter to Catholics in Ireland, the Pope told victims, "You have suffered grievously, and I am truly sorry. I know that nothing can undo the wrong you have endured. Your trust has been betrayed, and your dignity has been violated." The four-day conference will deal with many aspects of abuse, including child protection policy, cooperation with civil authorities, seminary formation, or how to deal with abuser priests. But it will perhaps be this belated recognition of the suffering and betrayal of so many victims that can provide the most effective tools on the long road to healing and renewal.
It is certainly common knowledge today that many church leaders in Europe, Australia and North America in particular, have been dealing with the sex abuse crisis for many years. And most of them have already drawn up guidelines on how to prevent, educate and support the victims of such abuse. This conference, attended by church representatives from all over the world, offered the chance to hear from church leaders in continents and countries which are only at the beginning of the process of dealing with the clerical sex abuse in their areas, such as Bishop Luis Tagle of Manila in the Philippines.
For me, just having a symposium of this magnitude and on this topic organized and receiving such a wide representation from different parts of the world and different religious orders is in itself a good sign. People are at least trying their best to understand the gravity of the situation. We come here as people who are willing to learn. Not many of us among the bishops and the religious orders fully understand, you know, this phenomenon. So I think this is first and foremost a study, an education experience for most of us. The second thing is we also realized that cultures differ, laws differ. Sensibilities differ from place to place. While there is a common concern and a sharing of resources, then I think when we go back home to our respective countries, what each one will do is try to see how we can move in the same direction of caring for the victims, making sure that they are justly and compassionately treated, but always akin to their cultural sensibilities and in accordance with their country's laws. But that has to be done on the local level, on the local level. As far as the churches of Asia are concerned, we are still in the process of drafting our pastoral guidelines for handling the accusations and the actual cases. And these guidelines need to be submitted to the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith for approval. As far as I know, we in Asia, the different countries and episcopal conferences, are still on that stage. We're still formulating the guidelines, you know? And we have been looking at the guidelines of other episcopal conferences like the United States, Australia. So it is an ongoing project.
And then there was Reverend Desmond Nair from South Africa. As he told Philippa, his presentation focused upon those practices of prevention and education that have been most helpful in South Africa in responding to sexual abuse, first within the church and then in the larger society.
The church is deeply involved in the handling of and the dealing of sexual abuse cases. The church takes it seriously, contrary, I think, sometimes to what people would like to think about cases being brushed under the carpet, so to speak. The presentation which I gave shows exactly how the church is dealing with complaints that are received and that the church is serious about these complaints and deals with it both in a serious and in a professional manner.
You're the expert dealing with it from a very professional standpoint. What kind of reactions do you have, speaking broadly across South Africa, from the bishops, from the church leaders?
Well, firstly, I'm not an expert. I just happen to deal with it. But the reaction is both positive and negative. Sometimes it's difficult to accept that a priest under your jurisdiction, someone whom you know well and someone whom you have entrusted with a responsibility, is actually a sexual abuser. And that difficulty is one that works both in the mind and in the heart of a bishop or any church authority, to accept this reality and then to have the strength to deal with this reality. So that would be the sort of the negative and the positive, the human reality, and yet the responsibility, or some bishops would have to recognize the fact that they wear two hats, the hat of a leader and the hat of a father, and now to balance between these two responsibilities, but yet to do what is right by the church, what is right by the victim or the complainant, and also to do what is right by the one against whom the allegation has been made as well. So that clouds the situation in South Africa, because often a priest is a popular priest, and a well-known priest has preached well, or whatever it has been. To actually believe that he may have done something like this is almost unbelievable. So it's not just the bishop who is in that situation, it's the other members of the clergy, and very often members of the laity as well, who love the priest and support the priest and refuse to believe that he might have done something wrong.
We've heard about one African bishop standing up at this symposium and saying, I had no idea that this was happening in other countries, and it must be happening in mine as well. Do you think South Africa is something of a leader on the continent in this respect?
Probably yes. For many reasons. One, because we have a collection of bishops who come from almost all around the world. It's pretty much a first world infrastructure in a third world country. But we're also a country that is saturated with media coverage, with satellite television and the availability of whether it's networks from the United States or from the Middle East or from Europe. We get news from all around the world. So it's really a media-saturated country, and so that's why, as cases are highlighted in other parts of the world, it raises issues in the local situation and also causes us to question and ask and study and reflect on.
So you would say the media, in fact, plays a positive role in this regard?
The media has played an extraordinary role in this regard, because on the positive side, it's brought to the fore something that was kept dark and secret, and now it's something that we have to respond to. On the negative side, not always giving us a chance to say what we are doing and to focus on what we are doing, rather than just to focus on what has been done. But the church is addressing it, and I think this symposium is a very positive sign of that.
Many speakers, many questions, many answers and different perspectives filled four intense days at Rome's aptly named Towards Healing and Renewal Conference. English Bishop Declan Lang, Vice-Chair of the UK's National Catholic Safeguarding Commission, sums up some of the achievements.
I think the achievements have been that we're recognising that this is a question for the whole church, and that, as somebody put it, what happens in one part of the world affects the other part of the world, and the church is one body, and what's good for one is good for another, and what's bad for one is bad for another. I think there's been that sense of seriousness and the deep awareness of how the whole area of safeguarding and the abuse of children inflicts a deep wound upon many people, obviously including, well, the victims themselves, but including others like their families, parishes, and the wider community. And the deep scandal that this brings to others as they view the church. I think the other positive way, though, that this conference has come up with is that this whole area of safeguarding is something which is a proclamation of the good news, and it is bringing healing to people. And the important ministry of healing that the church has for many people, including victims of abuse. But that healing process can only begin if there is an understanding for those people, and a recognition of the truth that they tell. So there does need to be a great deal of humility on many of our parts as we listen to the very sad and tragic stories that these people bring to us.
Participants at this conference, it was suggested that they were all able to listen to victims telling their stories before they came here as a kind of preparation for that. Have you yourself been able to do that?
I've been able to listen to some victims of abuse, and people actually who are quite elderly in their years, or some of them, and they've been holding this hurt in their lives for many years and looking for healing and finding it, but then finding again that those memories come back to plague them. So it is a whole, the process of healing is a long process for a number of people.
We've heard from one of the victims here at the symposium that it's easier sometimes to forgive the actual abuser than it is to forgive the church authorities who simply didn't take the problem seriously, who failed to remove the abuser or take actions to stop this problem happening again. Do you think among the bishops there is a realization of how much this has damaged the trust of people in the church?
I think it has. It has damaged the church and the credibility of the church, and it makes it more difficult for the church to speak out on other issues as well, because certainly in our part of the world, in England, we're constantly getting it thrown back to us by some people, not by all people by any means, but by some people throw back to us, well, what about the whole area of abusing children, and what are you doing there, and how are you people of integrity in that area? And I think we've got to show that we are in people of integrity in that area.
You have been dealing in England with this problem for over a decade now. You have some very good guidelines, I think, I understand, in place. The problem is always enforcement, isn't it, of trying to make sure that these guidelines are adhered to. What else have you perhaps picked up here, suggestions to try and make sure that they are really widely applied throughout the church at all levels?
I think that is one of the challenges, is the implementation of the guidelines. When I was on the Cumberledge Commission a few years back now, one of the things we noted was that the whole area of policy making had perhaps become slightly bureaucratic and hadn't won the hearts and minds of people. So it was to get people within the parishes to recognise that safeguarding isn't an added extra or the responsibility of just a few people. It's the responsibility of the whole community. And I think once people recognise it as part of the ordinary life of the church, then it's more likely that those policies will become a reality.
What about the situation regarding compensation in the UK? We've seen in America so many dioceses having to pay out huge sums of money to victims. How is that affecting you and the resources of the church there in the UK?
I think that many people, when they come to the church, even though they feel hostile towards the church, are looking for some form of help. And that help may really just be, in the first place, a recognition of what has happened, an apology for what has happened, and an offer of counselling if that is required. I must admit that there is a slight problem at the moment with some of our insurance companies, who say that if you actually pay out money before anything has been established, that's an admittance of guilt. So there is a tension between what often people are wanting to do for pastorally supporting people and what perhaps the insurance companies are saying is a prudent policy.
The conference was almost 2 years in preparation. It's the first time that representatives of 100 bishops' conferences and over 30 religious congregations have come together to hear firsthand from victims and to try and promote a consistent response of the church to the open wound of clerical sexual abuse. The title of the symposium, Towards Healing and Renewal, aptly describes the painful path from darkness to light, from pain and hurt to healing and hope, that the church has committed to undertake with the solemn pledge to do all it can so that the scourge of sexual abuse may never happen again. That's all from the English feature programme and from me, Linda Bordoni, today. But we will be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.